Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
What's up? What's up? Beautiful outside. It's not going to be too hot either for those who are inclined to a little bit cooler of weather. Here, it's a perfect July Friday.
Yes.
Camp starting up next week. A lot of news yesterday.
A lot of news yesterday for a Thursday in July.
Including, by the way, some good news for the Bills. Late yesterday, announced officially today, their entire draft class for this year is under contract. TJ Sanders, there will be no holdout. He has signed, so good news on that front. We'll get into all of that from yesterday. It's plenty more. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've also got day two of the Open Championship going on in Northern Ireland. A lot of random names, but also some of the big guys about to tee off here in just a few minutes, including Scottie Scheffler, whose tee time is at 10:10, so it's in about 8 minutes. Brian Harman leading the way at 8 under, did win this exact tournament back in 2023. He plays with the power of the sloth. I cannot stand watching him play.
Wait, the power of the sloth?
I cannot stand watching him play. It is so slow. It is so obnoxiously slow.
Everyone's got their own pace, Zachary.
Oh, it's exhausting. I get tired watching him play. He hits the same amount of strokes as pretty much as everybody else. But watching him play is exhausting. It is exhausting. And we've all been there on a course, if you're a golfer, that you're just waiting super impatiently for the group in front of you. And then they've got to step back after their few practice swings. They got to check the distance again. They got to make hit. None of us are good. Hit the ball. Harman, a little bit different. You are going for it, but let's speed it up a little bit.
He's a professional. I would say I would allow him to be slower in that case.
A little bit faster. A little bit. I'm not asking for a ton.
Okay, shout song.
Oh, just
See, brutal. The only problem with him being like, oh, I'm going to play a little bit slower and everything. Like, yes, that's fine. You're a professional. Take your time. But then people pick up on that and think, oh, I can do that too.
Yeah, what was it?
The problem.
It was 6 hour rounds yesterday.
Yeah. But that might not be all of Brian Harman's
fault. I'll blame it all on him.
If somebody's emulating a professional based on their pace, That's a them problem.
Right, but the...
Like, don't do that.
Yeah, but if you're looking for somewhere to learn pace of play, don't look at Brian Harman.
Yeah, don't do...
That's all I'm saying.
The one... I don't know how much they show of him, like, getting ready to go and everything like that. Do they show him, like, taking these extra practice swings, stepping off, stepping back?
They will sometimes, but not all the time.
So, ready? Then they're watching and taking away the wrong thing.
It's brutal.
So, again, people are going to take from it what they want to take from it. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not. And that's perfectly normal.
Sometimes
that's kind of what the world is.
6.5 hour rounds yesterday. I don't know what we're on with the pace today, but yesterday it was bad. I don't know if there's any delays either. Didn't seem like there was. But we'll keep you posted on the Open as it goes on this morning. Again, Scottie Scheffler, the number ranked player in the world, teeing off in about 5 minutes. Again, as we did mention, though, a lot of news in the NFL world, a random Thursday in July. I get it. It's right before training camp. But my goodness, it was a big day. Maybe headlined even more so than the second round picks all kind of starting to sign. Mm-hmm. TJ Watt, he does get his contract extension. He is now paid $41 million a year. $1 million more than AFC North rival Myles Garrett. I know there was a Cleveland station that was having a bit of fun poking at TJ Watt. I don't know, guys. Look, they may be like 9-8, but like they're in a better spot than you are.
That's like four more wins than the Browns again.
Yeah, 3-year deal, $123 million. Total guaranteed money, $108 million at signing.
Steelers 9-8 prophecy, baby.
It is weird, though, to watch them, how they've been operating, because it really is sort of in that sense of, oh, yeah, they you can't think you're a Super Bowl contender with this.
But and every NFL
team, they do seem to think that no, 9-8 might be just fine.
Every NFL team is saying the same thing to themselves: never let your enemy stop the. Don't stop your enemy from making a mistake, and that's what's going on here. The Steelers keep making the mistake of, we got to stay relevant. We got to stay in competition here. We got to stay a playoff team, even if it's a fringe playoff team. We got to keep this record of no losing seasons together and intact. There's no vision. It is just, let's put random pieces together and see what sticks.
That's kind of what it feels like. Is like, let's just see what happens. Maybe this will work. Look, I'm fine with keeping Watt, I guess. Although I was starting to get there with them. I was entertaining the idea of trade him. See what you can get for him.
If you could get everything for him.
If you could get 2 second-round picks, because he is 30, you're going to have to get a big extension to him.
It's still a first. It's TJ Watt.
Big extension, 30 years old. I could see a team not going for that. But no, if you can get 2 seconds, even a late first, cool.
You take 100%. You take at least a first-round pick for him, because TJ Watt does win you games by himself. He's done it for the Steelers. He could do it for you, too. That's worth at least a first.
It's just I was entertaining the idea with
being a rental.
Well, but that's my thing, though. If you're not signed to a big deal, though, then yeah,
I'd say a first round and a second rounder for a rental for TJ Watt this year. You're kidding?
But it depends on what team is going for it. Then that's the thing. I mean, they also may be like, we only want a mid first, so we're not talking to the Bills or the Chiefs because you guys are going to be late in the first round. I'm not taking 30-32. But I would have entertained the idea just because where they're at. But then they did sign Aaron Rodgers, and they did trade for DK Metcalf and give him a big extension as well. And I think most of us are kind of sitting here. I don't know if their odds have ever changed.
And
in terms
for some
of the
reason, they trade for Jalen Ramsey.
Like, none of their odds have changed. They're staying the exact same. They've retooled a bunch of stuff. Omar Khan did get an extension. But I look around the AFC North, and I brought this up with the Bengals as well, but really the only team I have any sort of fear for in that division is Baltimore. And that's been true for at least a year and a half, 2 years, because the Bengals have been in there. But now with the Bengals and everything going on with them and how they kind of operate, I don't really fear them as much. Their defense is not what it was 3 years ago now when they beat the Bills in the playoffs. It is not that unit anymore. And so I don't have as much fear there. And, you know, we were bringing up the top 10 quarterback list and the top four being what it is. But you also wonder what Joe Burrow's stats were if his team had a competent defense.
That's right.
If he didn't have to, you know, put up 35-plus every game. It's not to say he would be any worse. I'm not saying that. But we also wouldn't have these, oh my goodness, stats. He's clearly MVP kind of guy. When in reality, he's down all the time. He's willing his team to be competitive. I'm not even saying wins, because they only have 9.
There's an inflation of the statistics because of the fact that he has to play the hero every time, and sometimes context is needed in that sense. Yeah, if you have a competent team and you're able to win comfortably, you're probably running the football a little more. Would you not?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's because of the fact that they are always chasing that Burrow has to do it, and how you win. And if you're chasing, you're throwing.
Yeah, you got to throw the ball. It's just, you know, looking at the AFC North, it's still going to be a very competitive division. It always is. Those teams beat the hell out of each other. They always have, and they always will. And Pittsburgh will probably give a really tough game, because I do think Mike Tomlin is still a good coach, to Baltimore, Cincinnati, and they'll probably beat Cleveland a few times, right?
Mm-hmm.
They probably will sweep them, if we're being honest. Cleveland is really starting over. But then where does Pittsburgh go? If they go 9-8 again, I like what this quarterback class could look like this year.
Or even 10-7.
Even 10-7. I like what this quarterback class could look like this year. But if they're middle of the pack, there's also a really good chance they're not going to be able to trade up. all of a sudden teams like the Jets, the Saints, the Browns, just off the top of my head, are all probably looking for quarterbacks. That's three of them. I like maybe four quarterbacks in this class, maybe, and we'll see if somebody else kind of emerges. But you're in the same spot you are always. And Rodgers has been open. He's going to retire after this year. Mm-hmm. That's what he's feeling at this point, that he's going to ride this out, play with Pittsburgh 1 year, and hang it up. So, you know, where are they going? It's great for T.J. Watt. For the second time in his career, he's the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. That's right. Awesome. And that is something you can hang your hat on.
And it's deserved, because I just mentioned T.J. Watt has single-handedly won the Steelers games in the past. Why do you think they always end up at 9-8 or 10-7?
Right.
It's because of T.J. Watt. It's not because of their quarterback play.
But it's just, I don't know. I don't really want Pittsburgh to tank and then start over. Like, I kind of enjoyed that a great franchise of the 70s and 80s and you know, that you hear about growing up is not going to be that. But also part of me is kind of like, that's not how it should be. Right? Like, just in the NFL ether, the Steelers should always be competitive. They should always be one-upping you. They do it correctly, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. Now I look at them and go, where is your sense of pride? Where is the standard now? Is the standard still, we're here to get to AFC championships, AFC North titles, and Super Bowls every few years? Or is it now what the Detroit Red Wings were for a good period of time of, we just want to keep the streak alive, we just want to be relevant, we don't want to go back into the dumpster.
The end of Ken Holland's tenure with the Detroit Red Wings is kind of why they are still stuck in such perpetuity under Iserman.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Iserman's got his own faults at this point. At some point, you got to break through. But yeah, it's the fact that, like, you just needed to keep going and going and just make the playoffs or make it a season with just a winning record, staying relevant.
Mm-hmm.
There's no vision. And again, that's why I'm perplexed that Omar Khan got his extension, the general manager with the Steelers. And it really is something to me that, like, I don't pity Pittsburgh, though, either. Because the Steelers do need a true bottoming out.
Mm-hmm.
But that would also be good for them. And if they don't realize it, then I hope that they are bad for a while. Because they don't seem to recognize that, like, there are cycles in the NFL. And in all sports, there are cycles. If you don't end up respecting it at that point or recognizing that it is your turn, then you ultimately will pay a harsh price for it. There are cycles in sports. Sabres, please break that cycle.
It's just, if for them, though, they've been so relevant forever. I mean, their worst record since 1970 is 5-9. So, like, since the, you know, the Mean Joe Green and the Steel Curtain, their worst record is 5-9. They kind of don't, honestly, they at this point kind of don't know what bottoming out is. They don't know what rock bottom is. They kind of just know that we need to stay here. The problem is they haven't drafted as well as in years past. The Kenny Pickett pick was a miss, and I still believe they did that entirely off of the Rooneys wanting to make up for missing on Dan Marino, going for another Pitt grad.
Yep.
Had a great season. We're going to go get him because we missed out on Danny. It didn't work, and it never really was going to work. He was an okay quarterback in a bad class.
As a matter of fact, we'll go a step further on this. Their worst record in the last 20 years,
mm-hmm,
is 8-8, which is an incredible thing.
Oh, it's the thing. I don't want to downplay it. That's why, like, even to 1970, like, they are a team that doesn't know what rock bottom is. Most NFL franchises have felt rock bottom in that time.
But the thing about it is, the last 7 years,
mm-hmm,
it has been a different style of it. 10-7 these last 2 years, but they look fraudulent near the end. 9-8, 9-7, and 1. A very fraudulent 12-4, where they started off 11-0 and then crumbled down the stretch. 8-8, 9-6-1.
Mm-hmm.
And that 9-6-1 is infamously the end of the three B's.
Yeah.
Ben Bell Brown.
Their last playoff win is in 2016 against the Chiefs. A Chiefs team who, I mean, that's before Mahomes.
That's the Alex Smith Chiefs.
Yeah, that's still Alex Smith Chiefs. That might be one of Andy Reid's first years there as well. Can't remember when he got there first. I think it was, 2013. So it's one of his first years, not his first. But 2016, we're almost a decade ago, the last time they won a playoff game. They've been there multiple times since 2017, 2020, 21, 23, 24. But these are also blowouts. They've become that seventh seed team that is you're there purely to kind of irritate the two seed for now no longer having a bye. Like, that's all you're there for. Green Bay is still the only seventh seed to win a playoff game from a few years ago with Jordan Love against Dallas. It's just they're spinning their tires. They're not going anywhere. You kind of also have this week, and Bills fans, there's a segment of you out there. I know I've talked to most of you. You probably understand the feeling of Steelers fans going through right now. There's many Bills fans out there that want the Bills to fire Sean McDermott, but also kind of know in their hearts of heart it's not happening. They win too much. They keep winning AFC East titles. They're winning playoff games. They're right there, and they are. And Steelers fans, though, are looking for Pittsburgh and going, when are they going to fire Tomlin? And I think having the same feeling of, is it ever going to happen? Or is he just going to have to lead through his own accord?
But there's a difference in standard, though, too. That's mm-hmm. the other part of this. The Bills end up stuck in the same place in the postseason, but they are. Actually, no, I can't even say that accurately. They're not always in the same spot.
No.
They just keep losing to the same team.
It's the same team. You're losing to the dynasty of the 2020s.
Yes. And
it's the 90s Bills all over again. You lost to the dynasty of the 90s.
The Steelers did have that problem as well. But it is the fact that they are constantly challenging the hierarchy of the AFC mm-hmm. every year. They fall short, but they do challenge it. The Steelers are just here to lose in the wild card round, apparently.
Keep the streak alive. Don't have a below 500 team, the whole thing. And that's what it is. That's what it's become. And I don't really know where they're going from here. And I'm fine with it. I'm ultimately fine with it. But there's, and I've mentioned this a lot, I like good football. I like when teams are innovative and different, and it makes the league feel alive. And for Pittsburgh to kind of just be doing the same thing over and over and over again is annoying.
This is where my hatred with the Tennessee Titans starts. Because at first they were this team. This mediocre, never all that entertaining.
Everyone kind of knew they were a bit of a paper tiger.
You're just there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are good, it's fraudulent. And the Steelers, it's just, I don't know. You don't keep getting away with this without suffering at the end of it. And three of their last 4 years, playoff teams. But also, three of the last 4 years, negative point differentials.
Mm-hmm.
They're just this existence that nobody should want. Yeah, the Bills have a plateau too. It's two rounds higher than where Pittsburgh ends up.
But, that's the thing, and that is a difference. As we mentioned, Pittsburgh hasn't won a playoff game in since 2016. They've been to the playoffs five times since.
Their offensive rank the last 4 years.
Oof, not good.
No higher than 16th.
What are their defensive ranks? If you have those up.
8, 6, 10, 20.
Oh, 20. Wow.
Oddly enough, they make the playoffs that year.
Yeah.
They have the 21st ranked offense, 20th ranked defense, and they still make the playoffs at a 9-7-1 record. The standard is the standard, right?
It's just it's very weird to, and again, it's those things that frustrate me with sports as a whole, is a lot of these teams like just hanging on for dear life, not doing anything interesting, not doing anything different, but just trying to hold on to that sense of relevancy.
That was the last year of Roethlisberger, by the way.
And I even have kind of enjoyed the Bills bucking the trend, or them and the Chiefs kind of both bucking the trend, where everyone's thinking, you got to pass, you got to pass, you got to pass. And they're both like, too high safety. no, we're going to run the ball now. Even though we have our superstar quarterbacks, we're going to run the ball now.
We're going to balance it out.
It's different, and it feels alive. It's a big thing why I've liked college football. The play is not better. The play in pros is always better. But I have liked that there are different ways to win in college, although there does typically end up being the big way to win, which the Big Ten and the SEC teams usually have. But I've liked that college basketball. There's also that feeling, too, of different ways to win. And I've enjoyed that with the NFL the last few years, of the different ways to win and teams innovating and getting a bit different. I don't always love them, but I like that it's happening. Like, I don't really care for the tush push, but I like that teams are taking advantage of a rule.
Right.
And it's why I've talked about Las Vegas, the Golden Knights. I like that they're bending the rules. I like that they're being aggressive. They're different from everyone else in hockey. Where Pittsburgh, to me, is just – it's the dying animal. It's the old boys club feeling of just like, yeah, we're just – happy to be
They're
here.
They're quite literally happy to be here at this point. And again, you have a coach that has seemingly lost his place a little bit. Or he hires some of the worst offensive coordinators of all time.
Arthur Smith now.
Matt Canada previously.
Matt Canada previously, yep.
But Kenny Pickett was the quarterback. That don't matter. Matt Canada sunk that ship. And the Steelers have this relatively dogmatic way of handling coaches.
Mm-hmm.
They have to let contracts expire. They rarely fire them. Matt Canada being fired in season was a rarity for Pittsburgh. And you had to go back to like before color television was a thing.
Yeah, they've had three coaches in most of our lives.
And that's just the head coaches.
Yeah.
But like any coaches, if you fire any coaches in season, you have to go back to before color television.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty only gets you so far if there's not talent on the other side. Ultimately, it becomes the ball and chain that sinks you.
Mm-hmm. I don't find them any more particularly interesting.
There's nothing inspiring about them.
No, and they're not particularly interesting. There's nothing inspiring about them. They'll play tough. They'll probably win their 9-10 games, but it'll be the same old, same old. And it, like, and I'd say this if I was a fan in Pittsburgh too. Is like, how do you get excited for that?
But to be fair,
I've seen Steelers fans get really excited for the Aaron Rodgers move and the DK Metcalf trade and stuff like that. When in reality, I'm not saying tanking is the way to go, but there was also a realization of, we're going to have a tough season. Let's develop the young guys we have now, and let's prioritize, because football is all about who do you have at quarterback. Let's prioritize getting that guy. Instead, they go with the 41-year-old.
I think it's because of the fact that they don't know how it feels. It's been 20 years.
Yeah, they always kind of just figure it out.
It has been
20, a draft class hits, and they're like 12-5, and they're fine.
It has been 20 years since they have been bad. And when that happened, they land Roethlisberger.
And they're in the AFC Championship his rookie year. What did he go? 15-1 in his rookie year? They're in the AFC Championship.
Yes. And there is something to that of like, you know, being scared of losing because you haven't experienced it in 20 years. What the hell is that like, by the way, as I watch a hockey team flounder every year? But now it's different. When this 20 years of having no losing record begins, they are threats. They win Super Bowls. There is a different standard, literally, about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that last hurrah of them being good. It was after a couple of 8-8 seasons, but they retool everything, and it's Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown. And they go on this 4-year run of like being legitimate threats. They can't get home.
Mm-hmm.
But they're threats. And then all of a sudden, Le'Veon Bell holds out, and everything since then has crashed and burned.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talk about, you know, the loss to Jacksonville in the AFC divisional game. Then they missed the playoffs for the next 2 years. And then it's, you know, 2020, you lose to Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns at home.
Get smacked.
Yeah.
That's not just a loss. They got embarrassed in that game.
Mm-hmm. You lose to Kansas City, also in embarrassing fashion. If I remember that score correctly, it's not even close. 42-21.
And then
you miss the playoffs the next year.
That Cleveland loss, though, that's when they start 11-0.
That's right. And but that was also the year everyone was like, I can't wait to be the first team that beats Pittsburgh because they're not good. And like everyone knew they weren't good.
Then Washington beats them. Then Buffalo beats them right after that.
Yep. But then they get to turn 23 against Buffalo. It's a blowout, 31-17. And then last year, maybe the most humiliating one, is a 28-14 loss to Baltimore in which they just ran the ball on you.
And you faded again. That is something that Pittsburgh's often been doing, is they fade down the stretch. Very rarely has it been about where... Oh, and like the Steelers, the one year that they make the playoffs in 2021, it is because the Chargers go ahead and just call a timeout in overtime. There was a tie about to happen to eliminate the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm. And that would have gotten both the Chargers and the Raiders incorrect?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
That's yep. That one.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember that. I really wanted that to happen.
They don't oftentimes get in on their own merit as of late. It is because they started well enough against a bad schedule to start the year.
Mm-hmm.
It is schedule fortune that keeps landing them where they get to.
Yeah. They were the sixth seed, though, last year. I think I said they were the seventh. They were the sixth seed last year.
Yeah, Denver ended up as the seven, seed, but... Yes. Denver also heading into the playoffs, you could trust them more than Pittsburgh.
It was the year they played Buffalo. They were the seventh seed.
Correct.
Yeah, just there's nothing inspiring. There's nothing really interesting about them. But good on T.J. Watt, though. He is now, as I mentioned, the highest paid non-quarterback in the league, $41 million a year.
I feel bad for T.J. Watt because he's never going to know true success.
I think he's fine with that at this point. You're 30. You kind of know what your career is. Like, you are still playing for the Steelers. He's going to be one of their iconic names. He got a ton of money. And to be fair, it's not like his brother J.J. Like, it's not like we were having like a Peyton Eli situation where Eli, you know, you had people, he's the better postseason quarterback. Like, the Watt brothers are great. They are what they are. And they're defensive players. They don't have that truly attached to the legacy. TJ will be fine. He's got his Defensive Player of the Year awards. He's, as I mentioned, twice in his career, the highest paid non-quarterback.
As an NFL fan, I want TJ Watt freed from the Steelers.
Yeah, I'd like to see him on a different team, but it was like, I want to see him on Buffalo. But, you know, our luck is he somehow winds up on the Chiefs after they get rid of Chris Jones or something like that. So we'd actually get no freedom. 803-0550, the number to call. It is pouring at the Open Championship. Scotty birdies hole number one to go 4 under for the tournament. Harmon still leads the way 8 under. His round is over for the day. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
What's the saying? Right church, wrong pew? I'm sure you've heard that. I do think Saban...
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The NFL makes sense, but remember what happened in Miami. He wanted Drew Brees. He had Drew Brees locked in, and the doctors didn't clear Brees, so he had to settle for Culpepper, got the hell out of town. Quarterback matters for Saban. Colin, unless they go 3-14 and can get Arch Manning, I don't think that Dak Prescott gets Saban to the Cowboys. But I think the team to watch would be the Buffalo Bills. If they slip up in the postseason, they are favorites, and they want to run out McDermott, Saban plus Josh Allen in Buffalo, getting the Bills, finally that Super Bowl that's been elusive.
FS1's Jason McIntyre on the herd there, talking what has kind of started at SEC Media Day, thanks to Lane Kiffin, who, by the way, with Paul Feinbaum later, kind of joked that he was bored, so he's like decided to just throw out there that Saban's returning to coaching. Which, that's my favorite part, is that he's like, I was bored here. Like, there's nothing going on. Like, I missed my old coach. Bored. So I just said he's going to start coaching again, which I find hysterical. I do agree on one point, and I know Urban Meyer later on, I think in that exact show, told Colin, I don't think he goes back to college. I agree on that. He got out at the perfect time. We never got to see how Alabama did with Nick Saban in the NIL era. They're doing not the best in terms of NIL money. They are doing well in recruiting, but we never really got to see how Saban dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know guys like Kirby Smart, who's very much of the Nick Saban elk. I mean, he comes from his coaching tree, hates it. Still doing well, though. I agree. If he returns to coaching, I don't think he does, it will be the NFL.
No.
It just...
He would never go back to the NFL.
But that's the thing. I don't think he's going back, but he's 100% not going back to college. I think there's a 99% assured he's not coaching again, but that 1% is NFL.
No, that 1% is still also college.
It's not college.
You want to know why?
It's not college.
He's not good at the power dynamic of the National Football League.
I think he'd be just fine with it.
He was awful with it.
Because quarterback was terrible. He had a bad team and was trying to figure it out. If he has a quarterback, I think he's fine.
It's not about quarterback. It's about power. It's a lot of college coaches' biggest problems. It is a power dynamic.
I don't see him having that issue anymore. If that was the issue solely in Miami, it wasn't. He's not going to have that problem. He's a delegator now to his coaches.
Yes, but also, like, still, I don't think that Saban, who... And this is that 1% of him even returning to coaching. He would probably have the same pitfalls that he had when it comes to control, not being the most important person in the room, which is something that a lot of college coaches fail at. Whether they are younger coaches that come up the ranks or they are older ones that jump from college to pro, it rarely ends well for any of them because they are the backbone of a program. They are not the backbone of an NFL team.
See, I think that can work in the NFL. I think it does often. Sean McVay is the most important person for the Rams. He is number one on the call sheet. It can work. You just have to win. Bill Belichick's disciples, who all wanted to copy the authoritarian thing, were just bad at it. McDaniels didn't have a quarterback and then was kind of a nutcase. He was bad at it. Bill O'Brien had the quarterback. You just found out he's a bit of a nutcase. And that was their problem.
How many of those guys made the jump right from college, though?
Well, I'm saying from that, the authoritarian. It can work in the NFL. The jump from college
to the
pros.
There's a difference between authoritarian, though, and college coach authoritarian types. Not even authoritarian. College coaches. You are supposed to be the backbone because players leave in three or 4 years, sometimes sooner, based on transfer portal. You have to be the backbone of the program. You have to be the most important person in there.
Yeah.
It is almost a necessity. And in the NFL, if the quarterback is better and they don't respect you, you're out of here. Even if the quarterback's halfway decent and you try to treat yourself as more important than them, you're probably gone. The only example you brought up is McVay, who has not been a directly from college person. He grew up in the pro ranks.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how it goes. So while he is probably the most important person in the Los Angeles Rams, got myself there. While he is the most important person with the Rams in their organization, he also knew he needed a better quarterback.
Well, yeah, you're dead in the water if you don't have a quarterback.
But that's the thing. He understands the power dynamic as well. That it needs to be better, and I need a better quarterback to do that. He understands. That's the thing. College coaches very rarely understand. And that is why they all fail.
Well, because it's not a different sport anymore, though. It's not. It's the same. The coach now is the backbone. But you're making about the same as your players,
but
your big players.
However, Saban left when the sports are now starting to become more similar.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like Kirby Smart doesn't like it. He's at Georgia. Sark seems fine with it at Texas. I mean, for the most part, because they're spending a lot of money. Same with Ryan Day.
But that's also a man that would refuse to relinquish power. That's why he would never coach in the pros.
See, I think you can get by with it. You just need to win. It was no one liked Belichick playing for him, but like, we won, we're fine. So you deal with it. The moment you don't start winning, that's the problem. And that's where a lot of these disciples of Belichick, and no, they didn't come right from college, but that's, teams don't hire right out of college.
Because it always burns them.
No, stick with the NFL. Stick with the NFL. It's the same with college. You stick with college. There is a difference in the jump, but it doesn't have – Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame would walk in and be a great college or great NFL coach. He just would. He gets along well with everybody. He is a former player. He can do it. The problem, if you're not winning, Nick Saban didn't immediately win, but he was with a bad team. And he didn't really like the media constantly pushing him. And
Chip
he didn't
Kelly
have a quarterback.
Won initially.
Yeah.
And then he still screwed it up with the power dynamic.
Well, because they made him GM.
Because what do they want? They want total control.
But that's most coaches.
Because that's what they're used to.
But that's most coaches. We
that's
always
not most coaches.
Most coaches would love to be GMs. Teams have to be smart and go, no, we're going to have somebody else help you out. You have to have an ego. It's the same with quarterbacks. I think it's ridiculous when people are like, I like a humble quarterback. No, you don't. You want one that's a psycho. That is like, I'm the greatest gift that this world's ever put on this earth. I am the reason this city's relevant. That's what you want. You want the same in a coach that thinks everything they do is correct, but you have to have counterbalances. College doesn't always have them, but college coaches are now starting to get them where they'll have an assistant that pulls them back, that stands on their side. You'll see them standing on their side constantly. They're literally just whispering in their ear to be like, hey, keep doing this on defense. Run the ball. Stick to the plan. I've heard a few guys talk about that at SEC Media Day where like that's a thing now with coaches. They're all egomaniacs. You don't get to this job without being a bit of a nutcase.
College football, though, has been for the longest time a system of that. And now that it is changing, Nick Saban never lived in that part of it. He never coached in that part of it where it is changing.
Mm-hmm.
But there were no checks and balances. And for coaches like that, there's no way he would go back and coach in the NFL because it is the same thing that he effectively walked away from, which is how college football is changing more toward a pro style.
See, I think he'd be happy to go back to the NFL if he was younger. There is actually checks and balances. College right now has none. It's all paid. Guys can leave after 1 year. The recruiting classes kind of don't matter to a certain extent because, again, if you recruit a guy but he wants to play right away and you don't, he could be out and he was the linchpin to your class. LSU, perfect example, Bryce Underwood. He was the linchpin to their class this year. Quarterback, number one player. Dave Portnoy in Michigan reportedly paid him way more. He's gone. That was the linchpin to their entire recruiting class. Now, luckily for them, Garrett Nussmeier came back, so they're all right. They're fine, and they're recruiting really well this year. But there's actual checks and balances in the NFL. And to be fair, you're dealing with adults, which mm-hmm. that's something for a lot of these guys they'd rather deal with. They like having the junior seniors knowing what they're doing. These guys get burnt out because they don't have a quarterback.
Yes, but
Urban Meyer is the worst example for this because Urban, you saw, came in and decided he was going to treat it like a college program.
And that's why it doesn't – like that's why Saban would not because Saban is still used to that style of like college to where it will not translate. And he knew it. That's why he's walked away. That's why he's never coming back.
No, I think he just retired. He's done. He's good.
Well, that's true. He's also accomplished everything he needs to accomplish.
He's retired. He's good. He's not going to be the same coach that he was in, what, 2006 when he's in Miami?
Yeah.
That was young Nick Saban coming from LSU. I'm the best. I brought them their first national championship. These guys are going to make mistakes, especially at that early part. There was such a difference between college and the pros. Now there's a bit of a less one. The pros has more guardrails.
Yes.
You're seeing coaches try to leave college to be coordinators of position coaches in the
NFL.
And
now allows me the chance to walk something back I said. I think college coaches nowadays would probably be more well-geared to being NFL coaches. Whereas back in the day, before NIL or the transfer portal really became relevant, they have not.
Yeah, I mean...
But Saban never took part in this. So
well, no, but
that's why he would fail.
He did in the first parts, though. He got out before it got bad.
Yes.
I mean, remember, this is only Kalen DeBoer's first year at Alabama. Mm-hmm. He's now going into year two. He was there for when it was like, okay, this is getting, I don't like this. He had to beg it. There's a video out there, 3 years ago, where he's essentially begging boosters from Alabama, like, hey,
we need money.
We need money here, guys. Like, we are now competing against the Joneses of the world. Texas has oil money. You know, the northern schools all have really rich alumni. We got to, like, work this out. And that's why, like, I bring up Marcus Freeman from Notre Dame.
Right.
The only reason they're not in the NFL, they're being paid double some NFL coaches.
Yeah.
Sark is making, like, $9 million a year at Texas.
And that's what I mean about...
In the same state, Schottenheimer and Dallas, I'm pretty sure, is making 4.4.
And that's why I mentioned something about, like, they are used to being the pillars, and in the NFL, they are not. And that's really where I was coming from with that argument is they are the most important people in that building, always, bar none. And nowadays, though, it's different. It is evolving. It's changing and it's shifting. And I do believe part of my thought on Saban leaving is because of that. He knew he would not translate well with this. He knew it would not be something more suited to his style. And that's why he decided also to leave. He also accomplished everything he needed to. But he knew he was going to suffer from this and wanted out before he started losing. Or started more or less regressing to the mean, which is, you know, sometimes you win the SEC championship instead of always. That's why I think that that's still the case. And why, if he were to return, it would be to a program in college that would accept him as a short-term answer for something before they found a long-term guy. Why would you get back into the rat race of the NFL if you already accomplished everything that you need to?
I mean, you can ask the same though for Pete Carroll. And Carroll did work when he came from USC.
And Carroll's the one example that you can bring up, because for every Pete Carroll, I can bring you a Chip Kelly or a Matt Rhule.
We can bring a Pete Carroll
absolute
because he learned, but he learned from his mistakes.
He learned. He had to be humbled first.
Carroll went to the Patriots, right? It wasn't the Jets. Yep. It was the Patriots. You know, you realize the authoritarian thing doesn't work because they all – yeah. I mean, look, you're right to a certain extent. Most of them are coming because they've reached the pinnacle of college football. Mm-hmm. They should have big egos. The problem is they go to bad teams that have no quarterback. And then when they start the authoritarian BS,
but they oftentimes have a chance to pick their quarterback.
Sometimes, if you have a good quarterback class. Saban, from all reports I've ever read, Saban really wanted Breeze.
Does
Saban ever go to Alabama if he lands Breeze? No. There's no shot he goes ever to Alabama. He has Drew Breeze. We all know what he became. The arm strength was not the issue.
Right.
He ended up being just fine. He maybe isn't the 5,000-yard, all-time pass yards guy, but he's probably really good. And Saban probably never goes to Alabama because he's got his quarterback. I'm fine. I'm good. Bill Belichick, I mean, it's kind of, you know, famous now because I know this station's done a lot. Before Brady's got, what, a 500 or just below 500 record?
Yeah.
They all know that. The difference in college is you can recruit your quarterback constantly. In college, you don't always need a quarterback. Like, Saban's winning national titles with Greg McElroy and AJ McCarron.
Winning differently, as you had mentioned in the last segment. I still think that there is something to it where the old guard of college football, it didn't succeed for a reason. And now, I'd be curious if a college coach jumps to the NFL and is a head coach. I'd be more curious about it now. Because you are dealing with constant shifting, which is free agency. And having to deal with players getting paid. And maybe they might have a more important status than you. Now I'm actually interested.
I think it would work more. I mean, I will bring up Marcus Freeman's name forever. And I know Notre Dame fans also probably are constantly feeling this every offseason of when is Freeman going to not jump ship, but just too much money's being offered.
Yeah.
I mean, he's making a ton at Notre Dame. And I just looked up real quick some NFL coaching contracts. It's the big guys that are being paid the most. Reed is at $20 million. Peyton's at 18. Tomlin's 16. The guys that have been there and done it forever, they're there. But the young guys coming up, outside of Ben Johnson, it's a lot of guys that have been there.
I do love, though, ultimately at the end of the day, and the perfect way to wrap up this segment, Josh wanted to play this because McIntyre said something ridiculous that involved the Bills, and we touched none on that part.
Well, we did with the quarterback. We did mention the quarterback.
Kind of.
The Bills are not firing Sean McDermott to hire Nick Saban.
No.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick segment here as we wrap up hour number one. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start today with Frank on the line. Frank, good morning. How are we doing?
Good. How about you?
Doing well.
That's good. I just I was listening to your first hour of your segment, and I have to call in. I got to vehemently oppose your opinions on Drew Brees.
Uh-oh.
You said he is just fine as a quarterback. He, quite frankly, is the second best quarterback to ever grace the NFL in the history of all time, only behind Tom Brady. That's all I got to say. I'll hang up and listen.
Who said that?
I think I may have misspoke. He has a fine arm. I never said he's a fine quarterback. I may have misspoke.
Okay.
No, yeah. He is one of the best quarterbacks of all time. He's not second best, though. He's not second best.
Brees has enough accolades and talent that you can argue it. I'll accept that part of it.
I don't think he has enough accolades to warrant that. He's not the second best quarterback. We can get into that. He's not the second best.
I'm not going to get into
that.
With
he's you. Top 10. I'd put him more like 9, 10.
I respect your opinion if you say it. That's fine. But yeah, I don't think any of us were bashing Drew Brees there, my guy. Just wanted to let you
know.
He
did
that.
Have about an average arm, though.
Yes. But it was able to do enough work, apparently. A lot of damage, considering.
Yeah.
So,
second best. I feel like we're ignoring people's existence by saying Brees is second best. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.